Hey, what's up, guys? It's your host, Lopez, and I just want to say thank you for tuning into this episode today. If you're on Facebook and want to show some support with a like on the page, you can find it by going to facebook.com/behindcloseddoorspodcast or just searching Behind Closed Doors Podcast. You can also find it on Twitter at the BCD Podcast and on Instagram at the Behind Closed Doors Podcast. Last but not least, follow the podcast on Spotify by searching Behind Closed Doors in the podcast section to see all the amazing upcoming interviews I have to come. Every Sunday, I post a picture of a band with a hint of who my next guest is. Then on Tuesday, I post a brief clip from our video interview with a good highlight of our conversation we had. And lastly, post the new episode up on Spotify every Thursday morning. Now, on to the episode.
Devin. Okay, cool. Yeah, Chris.
So, Chris Rabb, how the hell are you, man?
Good, man.
Doing How's good? It going? It's going well, man. It's going well. Are you living in PA still?
I actually just moved back here in August, kind of a result of this pandemic deal. I've lived in LA for a long time.
Oh, okay. What brought you back to PA?
My wife and I had a baby and our family's here. So then we were in the pandemic and we were like, you know, kind of trapped in a place by ourselves. And so it was good to come back and be near family with the baby and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. How old is it? A boy or a girl?
Little girl. She's now 14 months old.
Awesome. How is it being a father?
Dude, it's so rad.
Yeah.
It's a challenge, you know, definitely a challenge learning a whole new bunch of new stuff. And, but it's so awesome. She's the sweetest little thing. And it's crazy because, you know, like I kind of knew this going in, but a lot of people will be like, oh, you'll teach the kid this. I'm like, that kid's going to teach me more than I'll ever be able to.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. I got a 2-year-old and, my daughter, she's 7 months old now. And like before, nice. Dude, it was just like, you know, I watched Jackass, CKY, all that good stuff, you know, and kind of my cousin, my brothers and I were kind of, you know, balls to the wall crazy doing that type of stuff, you know. And
yeah.
Once you have that first kid, everything like just came to a halt for me. I'm like, okay, I gotta get my shit together, I gotta do this, I gotta get that. Like, there's no more fun and games, you know. Like, you still have time to like make for yourself and, you know, for your sake, for, you know, your sanity and everything. But like going to, you know, like going out to the bar and stuff, like I don't understand why people that have kids push it off on their parents just so they can go out to the bar on the weekend, or, you know, they could go to this party. And it's crazy to me that people do that, you know. Like, wouldn't you rather be with your kids? And
right you would hope that would be the case. Like,
yeah,
I know. And it's sort of, that's how it is for me. I mean, of course I've been sober a long time, but just on the other side of things, even if it's not the bar, if it's other things, you're like, I just want to spend every minute I can with my daughter. And so even going to work, you know, I just was out in LA, this past week. We were doing a movie out there. I was helping produce, like a indie comedy film, and it was awesome. But even then, you know, you're like, I missed the hell out of her. Like, I just want to see her, you know? And
yeah.
So yeah, it's cool.
Especially like the early days too, man. Like, I noticed like with my son, he's already 2 years old and he's, you know, walking everything. And I remember with my daughter, with her being 7 months, you know, I'm like, dude, it's crazy. Like, where did the time go with you already? Like, you're already 2 years old, about to be three, you know, in a couple months. It's just like,
yeah,
it's crazy. You know, the things that you're like, God, you know, like staying up late with him when he was younger, cause we think he might have some, like a slight bit of autism. So he has like a lot of sensory issues. So like, he doesn't like certain textures of foods, and that like makes him go into panic mode, and he'll literally like freak out because he doesn't want to eat it. And, you know, he can't help that. But like, we didn't understand that when he was younger, why he was always so colicky and like crying all the time. And like, when it first happened, when he was crying, I'm like, oh my God, like, how do people do this all the time? You know, they have like 6-7 kids and they deal with the crying all the time. And now
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah, yeah.
You don't cry anymore, dude. Like, I actually miss those nights where you're keeping me up late. And like, now you're sleeping sound asleep all night. And I'm just like, who would have thought you'd have missed that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, our daughter had colic as well. It was like 3 months of just screaming, crying.
Oh man. And it's tough though, ain't it? It really is.
It is. It's really hard. You know, cause I think obviously the first thought for sure is just making sure they're all right.
And right.
Like,
yeah.
You have that feeling of like, God, I hope they're, you know, I hope nothing's wrong and all that. But then like once, you know, doctors keep reassuring you, it's just totally normal and this and that. And then you're like, God, my sanity, like I'm losing my marbles.
Right, right.
You know, like once it's almost like when someone falls and then like as soon as you know they're not really hurt, you can laugh at it.
Right. You
know? Like, so this is like, oh, once I know that it's like then I can say, yeah, I'm losing my mind.
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah, yep. I hear you, man. We're on the same page. Well, first and foremost, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. Like I said, watching Jackass and CKY and all that good stuff with you guys. Never thought I'd be sitting here today talking babies with you, man.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy. I don't know that I would have thought that either, you know, like that I'd ever make it to that point in life where I'm like settled down enough to like raise a child. I mean, shit, I was a kid for forever, so like even much past when you're supposed to be, so
it's crazy so, yeah. To see you, Pontius, Bam Bam, and all those guys having kids and actually, you know, take, because like I talked with Phil and Ape on here a couple weeks ago and we were talking about that, like it's crazy to see all the guys from that crew, you know, growing up and actually taking the responsibility of being a parent, because a lot of times, you know, people when they reach that fame and everything, they still want to do what they've been doing, you know, like they want to be able to go on tours for months at a time and miss most of their kids' childhoods. And it's good that you guys, you know, it's crazy. And I'm glad that you guys are
yeah.
you know, taking that responsibility. Cause like we said, man, it's not fucking easy at all.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not. And I think, you know, it is kind of that thing where you feel like in a sense, like you got it out of you, you know, like you like, there's nothing I missed. So I don't feel like I need to be out there on the road. I know the ways of the road, and it's like, it's awesome for a long time. And then you start getting worn out by it. And you're like, all right, I just want to be home. Like I keep saying that, like, dude, just reading a book and like taking a walk around the neighborhood. And I'm like, who is this dude? But like, that's what I'm into, you know? And yeah, Pontius, so his little boy and my daughter were due on the same day.
Really?
Yeah. They were both due December 20th. And my daughter was born the 21st. And then Axe came along a little bit earlier, a couple weeks early, but what was so cool is like we got to spend a lot of time together, going out to the beach and hanging out, and my daughter and Axe, we were joking, are like first boyfriend and girlfriend, because they were hanging a bunch, and then we moved back here in August, but for the basically good like 8 months of their life, they were hanging out. We were hanging out all the time. We were meeting up on the weekends and doing that. And yeah, I mean, Pontius and his wife May are just such awesome people. And it was just cool to be able to have friends that were going through it at the same
yeah.
time.
Oh yeah. Especially, you know, like with, you know, like Pontius, like Bam Bam and, you know, Rake. And I don't know if Deco has any kids, but I know like he yeah. really came off the grid with the whole CQI stuff and everything, you know, he just wanted to normalize and have just that normal life. And
yeah,
you know, and there ain't nothing wrong with that. You know, like you guys had your fair share of, you know, the crazy days and whatnot for whatever you want to call it, you know, and just being able to want to normalize, it's totally understandable. You know, like who wants to have a camera in their face 24/7 for, you know, how many days yeah, of the year, yeah. you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I think like Brandon and myself kind of went into that mode for a while. I fell off and just kind of was like, get away from me. You know, I needed to get normalized. And I think that was the main goal, was to just kind of get right. You know, like remember that I'm just some kid from a small town and I got a good family and good friends and stuff like that. And just kind of get humbled, you know, a little bit by I was laughing thinking of Iron Sheik, like, you get humble, you know, but yeah, you know, but fuck you in the ass and make you humble. But so like, yeah, the it was just kind of like, you know, stepped away from it for a while. And then I went behind the camera and just, I found that life is a lot better that way for me. Yeah, like, yeah. You know, I still get to do the fun stuff and get to enjoy that world, but not have to be like, kind of on all the time, you know. And I think that's what was good for me, was just to like turn it off and just be like, oh cool, let somebody else do it. I did a show with Zach Holmes.
Oh yeah, Zach Holmes. He's actually from, he's from Hobart, Indiana, and I'm like maybe half hour from Hobart, so like,
oh yeah, right, yeah. I came out there for his show Too Stupid to Die, and just,
oh, I remember that, yeah, that's
the camera guy on it. And it was just funny because you got to be like, you know, Tommy and Cody and all those guys, like, and Kyler, you just be like, oh, hey, it'd be rad if you like jumped off of this thing and did that. And then they're like, hell yeah. And they do it. And like, yeah. And like, it was fun to be like, oh man, I don't have to get broke off right now.
Yeah,
like,
you're not the one, like, that has to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I could just film it. And I was still a part of it all. And it felt really fun and cool. And, but it was nice to be that, you know, that side of it for a little while. And yeah, so yeah. Brandon's the same thing. He's got, you know, he's got a family and he's, you know, on the quiet side, but he's still funny as ever. Like I'll text with him from time to time and he's just funny as shit. He'll always be like the funniest dude I ever knew.
Yeah. Anything he did, he didn't even really have to like try. It seemed like it just anything that he would do, he was just always bringing a smile to the room, man. It was crazy.
Yeah. And he's like that kind of guy, like where you look at him and you're like already ready to laugh.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Like you're like, what's going to happen? And so it was just, yeah, it's just always funny. And still just like when I want to catch up with him and go over from time to time, he's always cooking up something hilarious in the basement or whatever. And, so yeah, he's just naturally a really, really funny guy.
So for you guys, when you guys were growing up, because then, you know, like I said, I talked with Ape and Phil. I didn't really talk too much. I talked with Jess, too, a little bit. Never had the chance to talk with Bam Bam yet. I'm still hoping to get that. And I'm going to get the rest of the guys on as much as I can. But for you, what was it like for you growing up with, you know, in Westchester and having the CKY days and all that good stuff when it first started?
I mean, it was awesome. It happened really naturally, you know, like we all pretty much hung out at Bam's parents' house in Westchester. And Phil, his dad had built two half pipes in the backyard. So we all skated over there. There was a thing called Team X, which was like the skateboard team. And it was basically like all the neighborhood kids were on Team X. And you go over and like April would cut your hair and cut like an X in the back, you know, so that you're on Team X. And we would all just skate there because he had two ramps right there in the backyard, and we'd skate. And, you know, obviously Bam was kind of just far better than us right from the beginning. Like it was just like a prodigy. Like you knew right away, like this dude was just on another level. And for me, like I would, you know, I would drop in on the ramp and then I'd drop in like opposite footed and he would be like, oh, that's so awesome. I'm like, this guy's launching off the roof, yeah, like into the thing. But he, you know, he was always encouraging of like me being able to just even drop in a switch foot, you know, and
right.
So that was cool. And then Phil had this awesome car that was called like the sticker car or like the banana boat.
Yep, and, I remember she said that.
Yeah, and we would always get in that and go find new spots to skate, and he'd bring us up to Cheap Skates, which was like an indoor skate park near us. And so it was just a lot of fun like that. And there was a video camera around because Bam skateboarding, like I said, was so much more advanced than anyone our age. And so Phil would basically shoot like the sponsor me videos.
Okay.
And that having that camera around, like, you know, Bam or Jess or me or even Ryan a little bit later, but like, Mark Hanna and all those guys, like they would grab the video camera and just be like, all right, let's film, like, you know, and you just talk to the camera a little bit as you're walking around Cheap Skates or as you're doing something. And it would just like, it got naturally comfortable to be in front of it or to be around a camera around all the time. And then little skits, you know, we make little skits or stupid stuff. Like I would say, like you end up like going up to Denny's and writing like "suck my ass" on like the sign or something, and then you film it. And like we did this one bit where like, you know, Phil was a bigger guy and I was this little twerp. So I got his suit, which was like a really big suit. And I put it on, and then I shaved my head like bald, you know, like all around the top, and then went to Denny's to try to get this senior citizen discount. And like, fun. And they just love the commitment. So they like, they gave me like, you know, the 10% off or whatever, but we would funny. Just do stupid stuff like that when we were real young, and it would just make each other laugh. You know, it would just like, just naturally progress to what ended up becoming CKY. But what it was Bam just collected all that footage from all those years. Like he just always had it all. And as his skateboarding was taken off, Landspeed was the company that, you know, they were looking to put out a little skate video. So Bam had all this footage of like Maldonado and like Kerry Getz and him skating. And they were like, well, you know, why put it on this other video? Why not put it on Landspeed? And then, so with all the skate footage, he was like, dude, he said that, you know, to those guys like Rob Erickson and Todd Swank and them, like, why not use all this random footage too with the skateboarding and mix it in there? And then that's what led to the first CKY video, was basically just a hodgepodge of stupid shit we had done, and then the skating as well. And that's what came out. I mean, ultimately it was like, if the first CKY video was really like the Landspeed video for skating. And then you know, but it was called both. It was Camp Kill Yourself, which was like Darren Miller's creation. Cause he's super into horror movies and all that. And like an amazing guitar player. And so that was his name for the whole thing, like the band and the video. And then the video got shortened to CKY. And then the band eventually was shortened to CKY too, because it was kind of like a marketing thing. You know, people were like, Camp Kill Yourself. Like that's a little gnarly. Like, but you know, but Darren always loved horror movies. So that was, you know, he had always seen it that way. And like I said, got shortened down to CKY. And so the first real video was Landspeed presents Camp Kill Yourself, which then became CKY, which then the Landspeed video got taken over, and it was just called the CKY video, you know. And then, you know, later obviously you know, Bam put together CKY 2K, which was like more footage, extra footage that we had, and we were always filming stuff, we were always running around, because I think, you know, like I said, in the beginning, it was years of compiled stuff. And then we just got so much more psyched about making that the mission for everything. Like, because, you know, we're in a small town and you're trying to like, you know, entertain yourselves and each other. And it was like, oh, let's film this. And then it just got to a point where it was just filming all the time. And then that's after the second one that really caught Tremaine and Knoxville and Spike's attention. And they had done Big Brother videos, which was like a similar sensibility, you know, like somebody eating a piece of shit for like a free pair of trucks, you know, like right. Stuff like that. And you're like, and like, I remember seeing that and being like, God damn, that dude ate an actual piece of dog shit, you know, like, and just to get new trucks. And then like, there was just all that really made sense that we all like were on the same path. So that was when Tremaine reached out and was like, yo, we're kind of doing this, you're kind of doing that. And, you know, Spike's got the connection to MTV. We wanted to try and put together a pilot, and that pilot led to Jackass. But yeah, the CKY days for me, and even the Jackass like TV show, it was so natural, you know, like it just naturally happened. It wasn't like lawyers getting involved and be like, wait, hold on, what are you gonna do?
Right, you know, right, like, right, yeah,
it was just like we were just filming to film, and we loved it and had a great time. And like I said, even the Jackass days with the TV show, because all the Jackass days with the TV show is like Steve-O would come out, Pontius would come out, and like all the guys, we met everybody, would come out, and then we would just jump in this little white rental van. And it was basically like Nate was Knoxville's cousin, and Gooch, like they'd have a camera and they'd film it. You know, and it was so, it was like the skateboard style.
And
that's how the show was. So, but it was everybody that we already knew, you know, like Trip Taylor, like we already, they were all our buds already. So it just, it was the right crew. And it wasn't
exactly,
like, wasn't like some Hollywood schmuck over there smoking a cigarette. Right, like, hold on. I know you're going to break your arm, but hold on a sec. I need to finish this cigarette.
Right.
you know, like, So it was really fun in those days, and not to hate on it, man, like to have any success was great. You know, I never became the rich millionaire guy, but I did have a lot of fun. And I traveled the world and got to be with all my buds and just laughing our asses off and doing our stuff. And I was in college while that was happening too. So I was like trying to show up to school, like a pile of shit, you know, just like, right. Oh man, hard party night last night, like right. TKY played this place in Pittsburgh, and dude, one time I went to Pittsburgh for the CKY show, and I was supposed to get back in the car to go to back to school because I had a test, like it was a Saturday night, I had a test on Monday, and then I ended up like waking up on the bus and was like, yo Jess, like can you guys drive me past my car? And they're like, what, dude? Like, we're in DC. I was like, what? And like, so I ended up in another city, you know, after the party and whatever. And then I ended up having to get a ride back from our friend Fitz, and he brought me back to Westchester. And then my mom brought me to the school, and I can't remember. I think I either missed the test or like failed or whatever. But like, but yeah, it was just that kind of stuff, you know, you're just trying to stay involved in school while that's going on. And it was hard to keep your attention focused because it was just a hell of a ride, you know? And like, I was way more involved in what was going on than school.
Right. Yeah.
So like, you know, and it was always funny cause I had this one teacher that I won't mention his name, but I wasn't a fan. Cause like, he, you know, I eventually switched over to the TV film department because I was a business major, but when the show hit and all, like Jackass it was going, but then when Viva La Bam hit, like it was just, I was just working too much. And so I could hardly stay in school. So they switched me to the TV and film. They gave me credit for like doing the show and all this stuff. And like the one teacher was just so like annoyed by it because I think like he always wanted to have success in that. And he ended up like just teaching, and then he just had this attitude towards me, and I had an attitude too because I was kind of cocky about that fact, like, well, I'm doing what you're trying to teach me to do,
right. And,
you know, I was just a young kid, I was a dick, but like, but at the same time, it was like, yeah, I was, you know, I was fortunate to be doing that, and so it was a hard, it was torn between two things. Like I did eventually graduate college, but I took some time off while we were doing the show stuff and traveling with CKY, touring with them. And yeah, it was just, you know, it was crazy.
And speaking of the sticker car, I remember Ape was telling me that Phil had some sort of like a buzzer or a beeper or something. Every time it would beep, he said that the car was going to self-destruct in like
two minutes
or something like that.
Oh man, that's funny. Like, yeah, because he would do that, like, he would do that thing, and we would all freak out, like, so bad, like, thinking that it was going to happen, and he would do this thing where he would have he'd be driving, but he'd have his, like, one hand out the window, but you couldn't really see that it was, and he'd be like, boom, and, like, hit the top, and, oh, what was that, and then you'd be like, ah, like, every, you know, like, if you're driving past, like, a golf course, he would, like, say, like, the golf hit, like, the ball hit us, or, you know, and he was just a big kid, dude. It was so fun being with him, you know, like it was like because he's such a big dude, like you just felt so safe, you know,
right, you're always absolutely protected. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then he was always goofing around with you. I always have this one story where I was so we were probably like 8 maybe, you know, and G.I. Joe had this like this little, they had these different packages. So they had like the regular G.I. Joe guy, but then they had this like little figurine person that was like an extra add-on in the package.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, for some reason I was collecting all the G.I. Joes and stuff. So I would go into Kmart and then just rip open the package a little and steal the little figurine thing. And dude, Phil came up to me. So I'm doing this on my own. Like, I didn't know anybody like knows about this, but I guess I had told Bam and then maybe Bam told Phil or something. I don't know how it went down, but I'm sitting there and he's like, "Hey Rabbit." I was like, "What?" He's like, "Oh dude, Jay Phelps was one of the skater kids. Like Jay's sister works at Kmart and they have you on camera stealing all the G.I. Joes." I was like, "What?" Like, I don't know how the hell he knew about that or anything. I didn't know how any of that. I was like, "Oh," and he's like, "Oh, dude, yeah, they have you on camera. They're going to come arrest you. They basically said they wanted to come here to arrest you." And he's like, I was going to try to, you know, stop it, but I don't know. Should you just get arrested? And I was like, "What? No. Like freaking out. And like, so he's like telling me all this. And I'm like, he's like, "Yeah, but I talked to Jay's sister. She said that if you just stop stealing that stuff, then the cops won't like have to come here and arrest you." And I was like, "Oh my God." Like, I'm like 8 years old, you know, like, "Oh my God." Like, and so then like, he taught me a lesson like hell, like through doing that, you know? And it was that fun, because I always say that because everyone's like, "Oh, he's like this big kid. You do everything." Like, yeah. But at the same time, he was like teaching lessons, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And like, and he scared the shit out of me with that. And I never stole anything again in my whole life. Like, because I was like, "I'm going to jail at 8 years
right,
old." Like,
8 years
I didn't
old,
even know you like you can't go to jail, right. Like or whatever. But I thought in my head that you could,
especially, you know, over like a little G.I. Joe type thing like that. They probably just be like, "Okay, whatever. You can't come back." You know, like, yeah, you're gonna have to go here. They're gonna have to they're gonna prosecute you, and you're gonna have to be in jails with, you know, murderers and
I was believing it though. You know, like he had me scared, man.
It's funny too, because when I interviewed them, I interviewed both of them for about 10 minutes. It was mostly April, and Phil had to take a call because his uncle, Bam and Jess's uncle that watches over Castle Bam, was gave him a call, and he's like, "All right, hey, I got to take this call quick. I'll be right back." And so he was talking on the phone, and next thing I hear is April say, "Hey, can you go take that call outside? You're being too loud." He's like, "Yeah." So he goes outside, and then not even like 2 minutes later, she's like, "Hold on a minute. Let me see what's going on. Phil's calling me." So she walks out there. And I just hear her freaking out. I'm like, I ask her, I'm like, "Is everything all right?" She's like, "Oh my God, Phil just fell out of his chair. And he sat down and it busted from under him and he hit his head on the side of the house."
Oh, Jesus.
So God. He fell and busted his shit. But I mean, he was all right. Like,
he was all right.
Oh, yeah, yeah, she said that he was all good. But the
when
chair,
was that?
This was about, I'd say, 3 weeks ago. And she said, "Yeah, okay. He fell and the chair busted out from under him and he's laying on the ground," and she's showing me. And dude, it was thankfully he was all right. But yeah, he was like, you know, like, "Yeah, the chair fell from under me," and she showed me the chair and it was all busted to shit.
Oh shit, yeah, that's crazy.
So for Jackass, were you more of a part of just Viva La Bam and CKY, or how much involvement with Jackass did you have?
Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of involvement with Jackass. A lot of my footage was a little like gnarly, like the running and shitting thing and things like that, like where they were like, I always remember the contract was like, MTV will not allow spreadable butt cheeks. So I always laughed because I always thought how funny that was that some lawyer had to write like spreadable butt cheeks,
right.
You know? Yeah, a lot of my stuff was on the CKYs and the CKY3, but I was on a decent amount of the TV show. Like, I was probably on a little more than half of the episodes for the TV show. Like, I was on the first pilot when that came out. I separated my shoulder in the shopping cart, and that was like a big kind of deal. I remember sitting around with the kids at college and they were like, "Holy shit, you're on like an MTV show." And it was like kind of crazy to me because I was like, "Oh man, I'm on TV right now." It was wild. But then, yeah, the show, like I said, I'd get a couple bits in here and there. But you know how it was, like, the show was like 5 second bit of you and then this and then that. And then, like, so I don't think I really got a whole lot of recognition from the show. For me, I got more notice from the CKY videos because I was all over those and then the Viva La Bam stuff. But yeah, I was in bits and pieces of the show. And then I was in a little part in the movie, the first movie. And then the second and third, I wasn't a part of. Actually, recently, it's probably going to be recorded as the longest movie ever in the process of being made. But the new Jackass, I was, you know, doing camera work for them.
Okay.
For that. And then the pandemic hit. I came back for a little bit, and then they shut down again. So I ended up jumping on this other thing, and been doing that work. And like I think I mentioned briefly, I started a little production company called Green Gate Entertainment, and we're just doing our first feature film now. We just shot it in LA. I just got back the other day. And we just shot our first full-length movie, which was rad. And just like a goofy, you know, funny comedy about basically this guy owns a rental bike shop. And then there's this other competitor that's trying to open a bike shop right next door. And he's got, like, you know, the love story and all that kind of shit, but he's got to get through. He's got to try to sabotage the guy from opening the bike store. And then, but it's just a lot of goofy stuff and just kind of like reminiscence of like the movies we grew up on in the 90s. You know, I think, you know, the directors of the film, they're the brothers, the Harrow brothers. They're rad. And I just really got to really like them and create a good, relationship with them. So we made this movie, and that was their feeling too, is like, you know, things are so serious nowadays, and the politically correct stuff and all these things like kind of take away the fun of just like going to watch a movie. Like everything has some sort of message in it that's all about like the seriousness of the world. And don't get me wrong, that stuff needs to be there, and we do need to talk about those things. And I'm happy that dialogue is open, but also I miss just like, let me watch something for an hour and a half and laugh about it and forget about all the serious stuff that's absolutely going on. So that was our goal with that. And it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of funny moments, and we were laughing a lot, and we'll see when that thing turns out. We'll put it out and see how it goes. And, you know, I was just happy to get involved with that. And like I said, first full length movie underneath my production company. So that's rad. And I don't know if I'm drunk or you're just blurry,
dude. I don't know what the fuck is
happening. But cool, there you go. But yeah, so that was super fun. We went out and did that, but like I said, the Jackass movie is in the making. It's just like the longest making of a movie ever because of this pandemic. But there's some really funny stuff going on with that too. Just having the whole old crew back together and all the chemistry that comes from that, and just really funny stuff. They've done some gnarly shit. I can't talk much about what's going on in it, but there's some gnarly shit. They take it to another level, and then even like the stunts and the pranks and all the other shit is like awesome. But then just like I said, just the chemistry of everybody being funny together, funny is goddamn hilarious, you know? So like, you know, there's times where like I would be filming some bit, and then he's over there like just being so fucking funny, like to himself, right, you know? And you're like, God damn, I want to go film that, you know?
Right.
But like, obviously what we were doing was good too, but like, he's just over there like making this like whole world for himself. And I'm like cracking the fuck up, you know? So that'll be really good too. And it was just so rad to be on set with everybody and having a good time. And just, you know, remembering some of the old laughs and all that stuff. It was like, you know, reminiscence of, it's 20 years ago now, you know, almost 21 years ago. So that's crazy. It was good stuff.
So for you, what were some of your favorite memories off of the Viva La Bam days?
I don't know. I think like it's funny because some of that stuff was a blur. I was a maniac. I was partying like crazy. And like I mentioned, I'm sober these days because I went a little hard in that time period. So it was all kind of melted together in terms of like, you jump on the CKY tour, you go out with them. I loved being on the road with them and just every night, like the energy that they brought. and the way they played together and just all that, like, that was such a blast. That was some really, really great memories from that time. The TV show was funny. There was times where, you know, it was a challenge not to bring it down, but it was like, it was weird. It was like the, our unit and our crew and everything that we did sort of got separated in a way of like, you know, like I said, the lawyers come in, what are you going to film now? This. So it started to get like that a little bit after about a few seasons in, but the first couple seasons were still had the magic of what it was. And you know, we had a lot of good laughs through that stuff. We made the Haggard indie film, which was a lot of fun. That was prior to Viva La Bam. That was right before it. And that was a lot of good times, a lot of funny laughs, and had that, like I said, that feeling of just like a bunch of independent people kind of making something funny. And but yeah, the TV show was good. I mean, there were, like I said, you have a, like, I really appreciate all the fun I had and all that stuff, but there is, you can't say it without saying that there was times where it definitely felt like the Hollywood thing happened to it.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like controlled, contrived, and, oh, like, let's mess with April, but let's make sure that like it's this and this. And you're like, let's just do what we do, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it's, so it got pretty controlled. And I think that kind of, that tainted it a little bit, but you know, I understand there was a lot of money involved and there's lawyers involved and there's these things, like, so it becomes a business and it is that. But like I said, the days before it was a true business, it was a lot more fun.
Yeah.
But I don't want to take away from it and say that I didn't, that I'm not appreciative of the fact that I got to be a part of something that was so great. And you know, we had a lot of fun doing all of it. So.
How was it for you tormenting and dealing with Vito in those days?
Vito is awesome. Dude, you know, like I always talk, I mean, I don't know if I'm supposed to freely talk about it, but I just like laugh because I used to tour with him a lot. We would go on these like promotional tours and it would be like me and Vito and Dunn. And I just remember coming into a room one time and he's just got like thousands of dollars in his pocket right there, like hanging out, and just cocaine all over his face. And like, there's just all these sweaty dudes in a room. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing in here? Like, why is it like, there's all these women downstairs at the pool and you're like in here with a bunch of sweaty dudes. And yeah. I'm like, dude. And by the way, the cocaine goes in your nose, not all on the face. And he's like, no, Rob, like, cause I guess he pulled out his teeth with the Lamborghini or something.
Yeah.
And he was like, it makes my face feel better. Like just to have the cocaine like rubbed all over it or something. I was like, all right, man. Like, you know, but it was just, there was those kind of moments. Like, I don't know that I, you know, you share those, but those are like the war stories of like that, yeah, that time. And dude, I mean, I love Vito. I don't know. He got himself in trouble at that Colorado skate park. And it's hard not to, you know, talk about that. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what the situations were. I do know Vito though, like from, you know, from just knowing him for so long, and he's got a good heart. So I don't want to say anything in a way that would detract from the victim stories or anything like that. But it was, you know, I would like to believe that he didn't have any ill intent.
Yeah.
He had a thing that he did where he would choke the guy and then grab the girl's boobs for the pictures. Mm-hmm. And people loved it for a long time. So then, you know, I remember feeling like, dude, it's a matter of time before you get in trouble for that shit.
Yeah.
And unfortunately he did. I think the girls were underage and I feel for them and I feel for their families. Cause I thought about it at that time. I was like, dude, if that was my daughter, I'd kill that motherfucker. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
So I get it. And I understand where they're coming from and it was totally just. But I just, you know, from the other side, I don't think he had any ill intent because, just knowing him and knowing his heart, like he wouldn't be like that. But you never know. I mean, people get crazy with drinking and drugging and shit. But But aside from that, like now to address that for a quick note, but
yeah,
then going back to just the fun times with him, it was hilarious. Like him just, you know, and like all that shit, like Bill Scalapini, you know, and you're like, you don't know like what the fuck he's even saying, but
he
then.
He got so flustered.
And people, it was so funny because people would be like, dude, like, is that all made up? Like, what? I'm like, no, that's how he really is. Like, that's how he told. Like, there was nothing made up about Vito. Like, that was him 100%. Like, basically, that was where Bam's brilliance of like seeing, like, yo, this is like a train wreck. We got to get this on video.
Yeah.
And like, that's what it was. It was like, no, he's that dude. Just put the camera on him. Like, not. Like, hey, can you act it out? Can you do put this on? And that's what's going to happen. And that's what happened with the show is like, it just became the focus of Vito because, you know, because he's just so fucking funny and like so ridiculous. You know, you're like, what is going on? He's got like three teeth. He's like got a lazy eye. He's fucking screaming and hollering. And like, you know, it is. So, yeah, it was ridiculous.
I remember there's a video I saw on YouTube, man. Dunn had tied back a branch or something like that with the rope. And remember he was walking and cut it and it smacked the fuck out of his shin. And Vito was like, ah, you know, and started, broke my fucking leg. You goddamn idiot. And
I know. I did love it because in the Viva La Bam days, they did like pit me and Ryan, like with Vito, like they would have us like go try and teach him how to dance or whatever. Or like, dude, just like go drink with him and do shit. And like, and it was always funny because yeah, like, you know, Dunn had this just funny, like maniacal way of like fucking with him. And Ryan was such a, like, just a, such a witty dude, like super funny and quick, like really quick. So, I just loved hanging out with him and Vito and just getting all those laughs from it. And that was what was funny about the show too, is like, yeah, there was stuff on the show that was really funny, but God, the stuff that didn't even make the show or that wasn't on camera was like even funnier.
You know?
Like those are the moments where you're like, you just feel lucky to have been a part of it all and to be around it all. Cause you're like, I would just remember, I mean, honestly, I would say that stuff ran for like 6 or 7 years. And those like, those years, like I never had so many like deep belly laugh, like moments and like crying, like laughing, just like you're in pain from the laughter. Like those like just being like, God damn, I've never had that much laughter in my life since then or like before then. But it was, you know, you have those little moments here and there, but like the amount that was happening on a daily basis of just laughing ass off and like rolling on the ground and like being like, honestly, like, stop, dude. Like my stomach hurts. Stop. You know, that stuff was great.
My personal favorite involvement with yours is the legendary movie that we just said a little bit about was Haggard. What was it like for you on the set of that?
Dude, that was funny. Like I've told the story before, but there's this car in the movie that, that was like my shit car, you know? And I was in college, so I had to I had to film the movie and then go back to school and like, and you know, back and forth. But the trouble was I had a DUI at one point and then I didn't have a car and I didn't have a license. So like, I think I just got my license back and then I needed to get back and forth from college. And so I go over to our friend's auto body place and they had this shitty ass car. They were like, yo, you can use this as long as you put our name in the credits, you know, like you can use this car for the movie. So when I got there, dude, it was like, it just had a big sign on the steering wheel that said no brakes. And then shit. I noticed that the dashboard, like all the electrical wire was like taped with like masking tape. And I was like, what? That can't be good. Like, don't you need like electrical tape, you know? And like, so they're like, all right, just take it. They're like, look, it doesn't have any brake pads on it, but it does have like the disc. So like, it'll slow you to a stop, like on the, what is it? The, I don't know, whatever the little disc part of the
rotor.
Yeah. The rotor, like the caliper didn't have the brake pad,
pads. Yeah.
But then it would like clench onto the rotor and it would almost like singe it to a stop.
Yeah, it'll grind it.
So
down.
Like, I'm like, all right. And they're like, but yo, drive this thing like the 1 mile over to Bam's house and then just like park it. And then like, you know, you'll put it on like a process trailer or something to shoot it. And I'm like, all right. So I drive it over. As I'm driving, it's like, yeah, it's like barely, you know, stopping you. You had to hit it like 100 yards before the stop sign to like, right, to stop it. And I get it to Bam's, and then I was like, no, it wasn't that bad, you know? And then like, so I decided like, fuck, I need to get back to school, but there's no car. Like, why don't I just take this car? But right when I got to Bam's with it, Ryan comes running out with like this spray paint can, and he just writes like a big dick on the front, and then he puts like Rab sucks, and then he just starts writing. He wrote I hate truckers on the top of it, but like backwards so that they could read it like well, and then they put this like shark fin, and they made it this whole fucked up ass looking thing, and then we had to like smash it to make it look like it was like a car wreck or something, like the headlight hit it. So I'm like, dude, I got to get back up to college. So I go to drive it. And as I'm driving it, or as I'm going, like the whole thing was like crazy. I'm like remembering the story, but Jen, Bam's girlfriend at the time, her cat had kittens. And like, I was like, oh, I'll take this cat up to this girl that wants one of the kittens. So I have the cat in a box in the car and I'm driving. And then like the cat's like rubbing all around, but it gets out and then it's like running under my feet as I'm trying to drive. And I'm like, shit, trying to put it in the box while I'm driving. And then like all of a sudden, like the masking tape with the wires like starts smoking, and I'm like, oh shit, like, you know, like it's like starting to like smoke and like spark. I'm like, oh fuck, like I think it was like catching on fire by the cats running around. And then it starts raining and I'm like, fuck. So I hit the windshield wiper. I had never checked, there wasn't even wipers, it was just the metal. So the metal's like scraping on the window while like, and then like the rain's coming down, and then the dashboard's like sparking and like smoking. And the cats run around, and I'm like, fuck. So I tried to like put the dashboard wires out, and I'm like burning my hands because it's like starting to smoke and like catch on fire. And so I had to burn my fucking palms to stop it. And then like I said, I couldn't see shit because the rain's coming down, and the cats run around. I'm like, fuck. So I pull over to the side of the road, and I'm like in the middle, it's like so dark. I'm on this turnpike, and it's like, it looks like there's like killers in the woods, you know? And I'm sitting there like, fuck, you know, like I'm like, I can't drive like this. But because of putting all the wires out, the headlights went out.
Like
there's no headlights and there's no wipers and this. So I'm like, I'll sit here. So I sat there like on the side of this highway thing until like the sun starts to come up, but I kept trying to like drive a little, and then
yeah,
too fucking dangerous. I was like doing the Ace Ventura like with my head out the window like because the rain was coming down. And so then eventually like the sun comes up and I drive up and I get there and I'm like, fuck this cat. So I give the cat over to the girl that wanted it. And then I'm like, yo, I'm so tired, I'm just going to like rest on the couch a little. And I fucking fell asleep and missed my law test. That was the whole reason I fucking went back to school in this shit car. So then I'm like, oh my God, I'm driving around with this dick on the car. I hate truckers, all this shit. And then I'm like, fuck it. So I'm like, I'm all right, I'm going back because I got to go film this other scene tonight. So I drive back. And as I'm going back, the brakes finally like gave out entirely. Like there was no more like caliper on the rotor. It was just full, like I pushed the brake and it went like all the way to the floor, and there was nothing. And I'm like, oh fuck. And I'm trying to get off the exit. And I was like, oh no, what do I do? So I stuck it into park, like, oh, maybe that'll do it. And it just goes click, 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 click. And I'm just picking up speed, like it did nothing. So I'm like, fuck. So I hit the emergency brake, nothing, like full, like compressed like that. And as I go around, it's like it goes down this turn, like the exit there to Westchester goes down this turn, and it like I'm picking up more speed. I'm going like 50 miles an hour, like around this turn, and it was like just skidding, like, oh, like, and like because like the it didn't have like this the power steering was all fucked up, so it was like really hard to turn it, like, ah, like skidding around, and as I skid around, I went flying through the toll booth.
Oh,
like,
no.
And the lady, like, I was reaching out. I was like, I'll be right back. Like, and like, I fucking, as I see it, like, it's going down another hill and around another turn, and I'm like, fuck, so there's this embankment that I could crash into, or there was the guardrail. And so I'm like, well, fuck, I guess I was like, I don't know. Like, and through my head, it was like a couple seconds, you know, and it was like, dude, like, I remember this kid got killed by the guardrail because it like impaled him because it went into the car. So I was all freaking out about that. And then I was like, but if I hit this embankment, I'm going to fucking break my face. And I had already had this heart. I broke my face before in this car accident. And so I'm freaking out. So then I just decided last minute, like, all right, well, hit the guardrail on that side. And so I hit the guardrail and it was just sparking all the way down. And it just like finally like stopped me. And then I got out and ran back to pay the toll. And I was like, hey, I have the money. And she was like, oh my God, like freaking out. Like, are you okay? Like, what the hell just happened? I was like, dude, the brakes ran out on this car. And like, and you know, of course it has like the shark fin and the dick and like the I hate truckers and fuck Rab all over it. And like, it just looked like this fucking nightmare. So then Phil had to get a tow truck, and then the tow truck had to drive me home, and I'm just sitting in the tow truck, like pulling up to Bam's house with that thing. And everyone's like, what the fuck happened? Like, dude, that fucking ride was hell on the way there and hell on the way back.
So that's the story behind that car that's used in the movie then.
Yeah. That's the story to the Haggard movie car. And dude, but the movie, filming the movie was so much fun too. Like, you know, like the one I just did, the one I just did right now with our company was like super small crew. And we're just here and there's no, like I said, like no Hollywood cigarettes being smoked. It was just like, everyone's having a good time and enjoying themselves. And that's what Haggard was like. It was just this, like, you know, kind of, and I hate the word, but it was like a magic thing that was happening. Like, where it was just all these friends having a good time. There's no dickheads involved. It was corporate shit. It was just everybody enjoying themselves and just one laugh after another. Like Brandon, like duct taping this like fake shit to the, the garage. And like, he was like, you know, he would just show up with like, oh, I did this chocolate syrup with brownie mix thing. Like, and it's like the perfect turd, you know? And like, we would just laugh our ass off because like the concoctions that he would come up with and the shit that he would come up with was so funny. And dude, watching him do that, like that scene with the like the train tracks and like,
yeah, with the like figurines.
Yeah, it's so good. Like watching him and honestly, and being in scenes with him was kind of hard because like what I would do is like, I knew if I listened to him, I would laugh my ass off and I didn't want to. So I would like, I almost had to just see it afterwards instead of like being in it because I would be in it. But I would just listen for like the breaks in his voice to know that it was my time to say something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'd be like, if I listen to what he's saying like I'm screwed. I'm going to ruin the whole take. So like, so I would just let him say what he's saying. And then I would hear this little moment of a pause and be like, oh, okay, I got to say something now.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And then I would say it and then go back to like fading out of not listening to anything because I knew I'd blow it. So, but it was just really fun to be able to, you know, kind of be a part of that with him and be in scenes with him. And
dude, it was the fucking funniest when that whole movie was just so fucking great. But the thing that I think it would be the hardest for me in your situation was when you guys were pretending to be on acid and Bam walks in.
Yeah. Like, that's exactly,
you
know,
the TV's turned sideways and it's just white static and you're like, you know, you want a chicken wing? And he's like, dude, shut the fuck up. And then he's like, what are you guys doing? And then Deco, you know, he just
cleans himself up. He's like, wittery.
Right. Yeah.
That is like fucking brilliant.
And he's like, dude, hold on a minute. It's my favorite part. And nothing's changed. And he starts laughing at the TV.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, what are you guys doing? Some sort of experiment? He's like, experiment. I like wintergreen. Right. Like, fucking so good. Like, just the way his brain works is so funny, man. And I had a blast doing that. That whole thing, that was really good times.
Let's go down memory lane. Let's hear you go into character with Kiki.
Come on, little key, eat a little hunk of meat.
Yeah, what's the story behind Kiki? Did you really have a cat named Kiki?
No. So Bam's cat, I always laughed at this. So his cat was named Whiskers, right? And it was like that little calico cat that was Kiki, like the one that became Kiki that was in all the videos. But that cat's name was Whiskers, right? And when we were young, super young, Whiskers had kittens. And what was funny to me is Phil always called Whiskers a he. And I was like, he's like, oh, all cats are he's. And he's like, get him and him. And I'm like, Phil, like, it had kittens. It's a girl, you know, again, like, and he'd always just call it. But Phil was the one that would call it Kiki.
Really?
And it was really like kitty, shortened. And like, so what we did, because he would be like, come here, kitty, like, and then it would just shorten down to like key, like, and we just were doing this dumb voice and like Bam and I, and just being like, oh, come here, little key, like, come here, and like, and key was like kitty, and then it was like Kiki, and then it just became Kiki, and then it just became like, all right, let's feed the cat, and then like just stupid shit, like, you know, bored after school and whatever, and like, and just doing that, and then Kiki became like, was born out of Phil calling this girl cat a boy cat, and then like calling it kitty, which turned into Kiki, and then, you know, like Salisbury steak was the Salisbury Subra, you know. So that's kind of how that all came about. And the funny part about it was like, so Bam and I were filming that and just like chasing the cat around. And the best is like, the cat just wants nothing to do with you. Like, get out of here, dude. Like, and you're like, come on, eat the little, like, ah, come on here, little bite cat. And like, you know, and then like Bam had the footage, and we sat there in his edit room and just were putting it together. And I'm just sitting on the couch, just laughing as we're doing it. And like Bam just kept adding like more dramatic shit, like dramatic music. And then like, just the timing of it. And like, we just kept laughing so bad. And I remember we were up till like probably 6 a.m. and we were delirious and laughing our asses off at it. Like, just so delirious that like, I remember at the end, we were both kind of like, I don't know, is this even funny? Like, like, right. You know, cause we were like, this is just like funny to us, I think. And it's just weird. And so, you know, deranged. And like, I think, and we kind of just thought like, it might just be funny to us. But then it ended up like, people were like, what the hell is this? Yeah. And it ended up taking off and being the thing. And then we did another one with like, because they like April or Phil or somebody like bought like this bulk can of tuna. And I remember it being like so big. And it was like, it was like, this cat would love this big ass can of tuna, you know? So that was like, get a little tuna cat. And like, and I was trying to get it to like take a shit in the you know, in the shit box, and like, and it was just like that like big ass thick can of tuna and the shit box like became like the next version of
I remember seeing you with the, it was a video, I'd have to pull it up and see what it was from, but you had some sort of fucking huge chunk of meat on a fork, and you're like, you know, come on, get a bite of this meat, you know.
Yeah.
Too funny, dude. That
is so funny. I what always made me laugh the most out of it is the cat, because
he's like, yeah, he's
cat's like, dude, face what? Just like, fuck you, dude. You know, like, you're fucking,
sees you guys crazy. Coming up, he's like, god damn it, now what?
yeah. So that shit always made me laugh.
So what one question that I want, that I've been dying to fucking find out, and my brother has too, from the movie, what's the whole story behind getting a shot of Hobnot Creek and a purple ass in my face? What, who came up with that? Like, what is that all about?
So I don't know if I understand it entirely. It's basically Hobnob Creek was this dude. It wasn't Danny, but he was like some dude from the skate park that would drink that. And like, he was like Bam obviously is the one to ask that question, but it was like the dude from the skate park always drank the hob, like the Knob Creek. And then that became Hobnob Creek. So Knob Creek was that drink, and he drank that. And then it was like, I think I'm confusing that with the guy with the blackberry brandy. Yeah. Cause the blackberry brandy was the dude at the skate park that drank the blackberry brandy.
Oh, okay.
But I think the Hobnob Creek, you know, I think it was just as simple as that. Like, there's the Knob Creek, and then like Bam or somebody changed it to call it Hobknob Creek. And the thing was that Bitaro, he fell like really bad on the ice or something, and it made this like black ass that he had. So it was just a how do we use that fucking horrible ass bruise that he had? Like he had this.
So that was a real bruise on his ass?
Yeah, that was a real bruise.
Oh my God.
And that was what it was. It was like that Bitaro had that big ass bruise, and it was like, how do you get that in there? You know, you got to show that. And I think that's all it was. I'm pretty sure you'd have to ask Bam, but I'm pretty sure that's all it was, is that he used to call Knob Creek Hobknob Creek. And then he, like, you know, we saw, everybody saw Bataro's ass, and it was like, dude. And Bam, I think, just figured out, like, how do I work that in there? You know, and it was like, how about a shot of Hobknob Creek and a purple ass in my face? And then it was like, you know, it was Bataro's ass was naturally like that from falling. I think it was on the ice or something, but it was so bad.
So what you were talking about before we wrap this up, you're talking about your movie that you just got done with. What are you thinking as far as a release date for that is going to be?
Oh, yeah, I'm not entirely sure. So what we're going to do is go into post and edit. And, you know, the goal right now is like June, July to be done with the edit. And then I think what we'll do is try to take it around to some festivals.
Okay.
And then after we do that, then see if somebody will buy it. You know, and if somebody buys it, then we go from there with the distribution of it. But yeah, that's the goal now, is to like get it edited and then go out to some festivals with it and have that little like run with the festival circuit, and then see if we can get somebody to distribute it through doing that.
Sweet deal, man. And then my last question for you is, for anyone that wants to follow in your footsteps, what advice would you give to them?
Don't do it. I mean, I don't know what the heck my footsteps are, but I think that my thought is that everybody has a different journey. But if you do love this filmmaking thing and you love, like, you know, doing TV, film, whatever, like, you know, find your journey and just don't give up on it. And I think the thing is, like, I always said this because my cousin went into the film business, and he's an awesome editor, and he works with like Will Smith and shit. And he, like, you know, my aunt and uncle were kind of like, don't you want to tell him like not to do that? And I was like, well, I mean, I was like, no matter what I say, he's probably going to do it anyway. And the thing is, like, cause they saw some of my struggles, you know, they saw like my struggles with drugs and alcohol and things like that. And I think everyone will think, oh, that's the way it's going to go. And it's like, right, well, yeah, not necessarily. Everyone's got a different path, you know? And so, you know, talking to my cousin, when they're like, oh, don't you think like it's probably hard road? I'm like, I talked to him and he was like, you know, at 16 years old, the dude's already writing screenplays and he's already doing this stuff. And I'm like, he wants this. He likes this. Like, so what I always felt was, if he went into it, you would know real quick if you like it or if you don't like it. You know, it's a hard road. It's not like this easy, like, oh, cool. And then it all just works out, right? Like it did for you. And I'm like, well, we did film stuff for a long time. I don't think we ever had any intention of it taking off, but it did. And we had some luck and we definitely stepped in shit. I'm not going to say we didn't, but, you know, but then afterwards, after the Viva La Bam days for me, like it was a hard road. I was trying to figure out how to get, like, find my way in the production side of things.
Yeah.
And it's not so easy. So, you know, I think that it's kind of like that feeling, like if it's in you, it's in you, and you're not going to be able to ignore it. But if you could do anything else, do it, you know. But if there's a thing in you that's like, I have to create this stuff, I have to do this stuff, then there's nothing that's going to stop you from doing that. And you just have to have that in you. And if you don't have that in you, then yeah, go do something else. I've said that plenty of times, dude. If I could just be like a nonprofit lawyer or something, because I have a nonprofit that we do work in Haiti, and if I could just be a nonprofit lawyer and make a good living doing that and be happy with that, then I would sure do that. But I can't. Like, there's something in me that's always like, no, I got to go make something. I got to create something. I got to feel like, I feel gratified by doing that, and that's not going to go away. So I just have to do that. And no matter how hard the road could be, because sometimes it's like feast or famine, you know, sometimes you're doing really great and sometimes it's hard, but you just keep going for it. And like I said, there's nothing I can say or would say that would help anybody or change anybody's mind. If you want to do it, do it. And if you can do anything else, do that. But if you want to do it, there's nothing that's going to stop you. And just know that, like, it's worth it to feel fulfilled, you know, within yourself creatively, then you just got to go for that.
And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions that I'm sure that you've noticed right off the bat. Like, even now, like, people are probably thinking, you know, he was with Viva La Bam and CKY and hung out with Bam Margera and them, so he must be rich and he must be, you know, have no worries and everything must be just so lollygaggy dandy for him, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely the misconception, because it is not that way. But you know, that's what we laughed about. I think April and Phil would laugh about that a lot with me too, because they were like, "Oh, we're not like rich." Like, Bam made a lot of money from skateboarding and like Jackass and those things were a platform for that. But like, the majority of the money came from merchandise, from skateboarding and things like that. Like, where for me, like, I got paid, you know, decently when you think about it for a TV show, but not like change your life money. And so it's just like any other job, but people don't recognize that because they think as soon as you're on TV, you're rich. But that is not the case. That is never the case. That, you know, and I think it's nice that the transparency is out there with that these days, because just because you get on a TV show or do this, that in no way means that you're going to be rich. And back in the day, you know, in the early 2000s, when we were on the show, April and I would talk about that, how we just have to like keep this like smoke and mirrors show, this facade of like being rich. Like, we had to keep it up because like we're on the red carpet for the premiere of Jackass. We're this. And like, you're like, dude, I don't have fucking two nickels to rub together, but I had to pretend that I did because people want to believe that. They want to believe that show. And I was young. I didn't necessarily have to pretend, but I did pretend because I was young and I didn't really get it. And I was like, kind of getting whisked away into the Hollywood thing too, and going, well, I guess you just pretend like you got it all and you just want to sort of like, you know, and you do that. And then as time goes, and like I said, as I got sober and stopped living that kind of bullshit lie, I became real and said, no, I didn't make a lot of money, man. I didn't, you know, I didn't have that glamorous bullshit that you think, you know, I mean, Bam did, Knoxville did, some of the guys did, but I didn't. You know, and being honest with that is good, because I think people can recognize that, you know, it's not just like you just walk in and won the lottery. Some people did win the lottery, but I didn't. I'll say this. I didn't win the lottery financially, but I definitely won the lottery in terms of experience in life. I'm very fortunate for that. And I appreciate every bit of everything I've had. And I feel very lucky for that. But yeah, like the reality of, am I a millionaire? No. You know, and you know, you just keep on working and keep on doing your thing. But I realized that, and however cliche and corny it sounds, I realized that money wasn't everything, and it really was important for me to like what I'm doing and love what I'm doing, and I continue to love what I'm doing. Like I said, just on that little film, we were laughing a lot, dude, and that's what I do this for, because that payment is fucking incredible. Sure, I'd like the big houses and the fancy shit, I guess. I mean, I don't know that that's going to fulfill me in any way, because what I've found from friends who have had that, it's not fulfilling. It doesn't like fill that hole that you have. The only thing that it really does is getting in touch with yourself and being happy with what you're doing and who you are as a person. I like, you know, I think, like I said, however corny that stuff sounds, it's true. And what I did realize, like I said, from the friends who got rich and the other people that I've been around, like the big celebrity people, there's some empty holes there, man.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And 100%. Yeah. And so it looks lovely on the outside, but when you're sitting in it, it's not that, you know, it's not as easy as it looks, and it's not as great as it seems. So.
And especially being a father too, I feel like, you know, just seeing your daughter, you know, that glow in their eyes when they see you and that big old smile, that won't amount to anything that anyone could ever offer.
Never.
You know,
never. Yeah. Like that's where I say, like, I'm rich in all those ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the best thing in the world, for real. No money in the world will ever give you that feeling that you get from your daughter.
Yeah.
And so that's super cool. But yeah, you know, I just keep plugging away, keep doing things, because it's fun, man. And I've been fortunate to make a living out of doing it, you know? So like I said, I'm not some sob story, but at same time, it's not an easy road. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind. Like I said, if I could be, go be a lawyer and it would just be an easier financial path, then great. But unfortunately I don't have that in me. I got to do this stuff, you know, and I realize that, and it's cool. And I feel lucky for that. And like I said, if there's other people that are interested in doing it, do it. And you'll see real quick if you like this.
Right.
Yeah. It does kick your ass. You know, there's no doubting that, like, you're on an 18-hour day on set and you're like beat the fuck up and you're doing it. And then like, and then all of a sudden everything, all the money falls out of the budget and you can't do the project. And then you got to go re-hit the thing and figure out what you're doing and whatever. And like, what is it that you do? Like, you know, you do your podcast. Are you a musician or?
So what I do is I just do this on the side, and I'm a dump truck driver. So like, kind of, I went through a little bit of I had to really take a big risk, and not necessarily risk. Like, I had to make a good sacrifice for this, because before I worked at a job and I fucking hated it. I couldn't stand it, and ended up just walking out because, you know, things just weren't working out. I was being threatened to have my vacation time taken away like a couple days prior to a planned vacation. So, you know, I said, just fuck this, and I gotta go. So at that point, I kind of feel like I made a mistake, because I was, you know, unemployed at the time and I didn't have any plans or any leads to what I wanted to do. So I thought, you know, I might as well just go get my CDL. But thing with that is, it's not easy to get your CDL. You got to pay out of pocket usually to you to do that. And I'm sitting there for a week and I'm like, damn, what am I going to fucking do? I don't have the money to do this. And I found a school in Wisconsin that pays you to train with them. But the thing is, I had to stay with them for 4 weeks at a, you know, one time, so a month. Not that bad, you know, but it just sucked because I had my wife at home. She was pregnant with my daughter and my son was at home. And I didn't want to leave that dude, you know, being home for a month straight to go to be away for, you know, a month and then go over the road after that. So that's, it was a huge thing I took. But now, thankfully, I'm employed by my my old football coach from high school. It's a family owned dump truck business. They're great people.
So you did get your license, like your CEO?
Yep. I got everything set in stone, man.
Have to go on the road all the time. Oh, that's awesome.
Dude, for 7 months I did it, and it killed me because being, you know, I'd only be home on the weekends for 48 hours at the most. And then I'd have to go back out for a week. Would only make about $400 to $500 a week at the company I was with for being on all week. And it just wasn't working out, you know, and that's when my football coach called me, and I was, you know, without hesitation, I was like, absolutely, you know, get me out of this fucking truck. I hated it.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, I understand what you mean. Like, there's sacrifices you're going to make with everything, and everything that you want isn't going to be easy. Like, I never would have imagined that, you know, I'd take that risk of being gone for 7 months at a time, let alone, you know, people that do it for fucking years until a local gig comes around. And it's just, dude, there's so much to anything that you want to do. It's not going to just come just like that.
I know. It's crazy. It is, like, no matter. And I think that's what for me, you know, continually helps me realize to just keep going in this direction with this stuff, because there are times when you're like, you know, like, you're on a famine moment and you're like, oh, do I want to keep doing this? Maybe I'll do something else. But the thing is that exists in everything. You know, I've watched some of my buds that have those like safe, you know, corporate jobs get fired and lose all this and lose everything. I'm like, yeah, that ain't worth it.
No, not at all. And it's funny that you say that they wrote, you know, fuck, I hate truckers or whatever on that car. Cause dude, they take things so seriously. It's unreal. Like
that. Well, Dunn was trying to get my ass kicked.
that's what I was, that I'm surprised it didn't happen. Cause with this recent, before the election happened, like I'd say like 2 weeks before, you know, they elected Biden in for president, I was getting on my CB on by truck stops and like plazas and whatnot. And I'd play recordings of Biden talking shit about Trump, and dude, so many of those truck drivers freaked the fuck out. And then you'd have the occasional truck drivers that were, you know, cool with Biden. Like, yeah, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're going back and forth. And they're literally like, well, I'm over on the westbound plaza. If you're on the eastbound plaza, get your ass over here and I'll show you what a real bitch is.
Oh,
they really were about to fight.
Dude, I wouldn't fuck with that. I was just watching that, like, that truck driver that like serial killed a whole bunch of people. I'm like, I wouldn't fuck with that. No way.
No, man. Yeah. They take their shit serious. And
yeah, I would imagine. They're so funny. They're tough dudes. Yeah. That's funny.
It was really good talking with you today.
Yeah, hell
before
yeah.
Before we jump off here, is there anything you want to say?
No, man. I love having the conversation with you. It's good to get to know you. And the only thing, like the things I got going on, I've got that movie called Afternooner. I put a couple little things on my Instagram for it. That'll be coming out end of the summer or something around then. We'll see. And then, I've got a nonprofit called Hope for Today, hope4today.org. That's stuff that we do projects in Haiti. That's been slowed down a little bit with this pandemic. I haven't gone down there, in a little while. And that's the thing where I'm trying to raise some money for a school in, this town called Rensemble. So we're trying to get a school built there. And then other than that, yeah, I mean, we'll see when the new Jackass thing comes out yeah, man, just plugging away.
Yeah, once that movie comes out and once the Jackass stuff comes back out, I'll have to hit you back up and we can touch base on some more stuff, more current stuff at that point.
Sweet. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Not a problem, Chris. You have a good one, buddy.
All right, brother. Take care.
We'll see you.